So we are holding on Yud Amud Bey's second line from the bottom. We learned yesterday that Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah that there's only, Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah that there are three times for Bedikas Chametz, and we explained that doesn't mean he says that you have to do Bedikas Chametz each of those three times. It means that those are the only three times that you can do it, and if you miss those, then that's it. You shouldn't do Bedikas Chametz anymore. And we ended up saying the reason was because Rabbi Yehuda is concerned that if you do Bedikas Chametz any later than that, any later than the time of Biur Chametz, then you might come to eat it. As opposed to the Chachamim, and the Mishnah said that no, you can continue, you can check, you can do Bedikas Chametz later on also if you didn't do it earlier. You can do it even B'Soich HaMoyed or La'achar HaMoyed, which Rashi said meant during the sixth hour, which is the time of Biur, and La'achar HaMoyed would mean the rest of the day until Yom Tov begins. And according to Tosfos, B'Soich HaMoyed meant any time from the sixth hour, from the seventh hour, from the afternoon of Erev Pesach all the way until the end of Yom Tov, and then L'Achar HaMoyed would be after the Yom Tov, where you'd be searching for it in order to get rid of it, so because it's Chametz Sha'avar all of our Pesach. So the point is, we're saying, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda is concerned that if you're searching for Chametz during Pesach, or any time after the sixth hour on Erev Pesach, you might come to eat it. And the Chachamim don't seem to be concerned about that. So the Gemara asks, to me, Gozer Rabbi Yehuda, Doma Asi Lamechal Minei? Are you telling me that Rabbi Yehuda is concerned about that when you're dealing with something that's also to eat, you might come to eat it? V'atnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Menachos, Mishakara va'oimer, as soon as the oimer was brought, which at that point is when chodesh becomes mutter. Now we in Chutzlaretz are not as familiar with chodesh because you have a machlokes haposkim whether it applies outside Eretz Yisrael, and we go according to the Bach and other achronim who say that it doesn't. Many people in the Velt, of course, are careful about it in Chutzlaretz also. And Eretz Yisrael, it's applicable. And in the time when the Beis Mikdash was standing, when did Chodesh become Mutter, is when the Omer was brought. After the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, the halacha is that it's also for the entire day of the 16th of Nisan, and for B'nai Chutzlaretz, for B'nai Chutzlaretz who keep Chodesh, also the 17th. Anyway, the Mishnah says, as soon as the Omer was brought, Yotzin, you could go out, and find the marketplaces of Yerushalayim, that they are full of flour and toasted grain from Chodesh. Now, obviously, if they're selling it the moment that the Omer was brought, means that the harvesting and the processing and all was done before the Omer was brought, and therefore that was, in particular, the harvesting was done before. In fact, they would have had to do the harvesting before Yom Tov. And Rav Meir says they're doing that without the consent of the Chachamim. The Chachamim wouldn't have allowed that because they would say that while you're working with it, you might come to eat it. And that's also true. It's still Chodesh. Rav Yehuda says it was with the permission of the Chachamim. Because apparently, so he's not concerned. So he's not concerned that you might come to eat from it. Now, why not? If in the mission over here he's concerned that if you're being boded chametz, you might eat from it, why aren't we concerned the same thing that as you're harvesting and processing and whatever the chodesh, that you might come to eat from it? The answer is Amar Rava. So Rava answers, Hagoras Abach changes it to Rabba, and in fact, in the parallel Gemara in Menachos, it does say Rabba. The Pnei Yeshua also has a reason, which we'll discuss soon, Bez Hashem, why here it's better to say Rabba. Anyway, Rabba is the previous generation, right? Anyway, he says, Shiny Chodosh. It's different when it comes to Chodosh. It's different than Chometz. Mitoch Shalait. Because with Chodesh, you're not allowed to harvest it in the normal way. In fact, the Pasuk tells us that the Omer actually has to be Reishis Ktzirchem, has to be the first of your harvest. What are you allowed to do? You're allowed to pick the ears of grain you're allowed to pick the ears of grain by hand. So since you need to do it that way, since you can't harvest it, you can't cut it with a sickle as you normally would, who's Zachor, therefore you're going to remember that it's Chodesh, and therefore you're not going to eat it. Abayas says Tenach B'Shas K'tifa. Okay, that explains when you're picking. That explains when you're picking the grain. You're not gonna forget. Tchinav Hakada Mai Ikal Meimer. What are you gonna say when it comes to the grinding of it and the sifting of it? What are you going to do? What are you gonna have then? And we said in the Mishnah after all that they were selling Kemach flour. So what kind of shinui would they make with that? That meanwhile, while you're eating with it, you're not gonna munch on some of it. The answer is, okay, hold on, kasha. That's not a big kasha. Tchina berechaya diyad. You could say when it comes to the grinding, they instead they would use a hand mill instead of normally they would be able to use a water-powered mill, one where the wheel is turned by a current of water. Or you also have the Gemara mentions in different places they had ones that were turned by animals, etc. Anyway, the point is they had larger ones that you would use. Over here, you have to over here. Let's say we would say you have to use a hand mill, and that'll remind you that's different. And how kodah gabe nafa, and when it comes to sifting it, fine. What you'll have to do is maybe you'll have to make a shinui instead of using the sieve to sift it right side up. You'll turn the sieve over and you'll turn the sieve over and sift through it that way. That would also be a shinui. That's true. You could tell the difference between solus and kemach, but the expression in the Mishnah was kemach v'koli. Because solus, I mean, you have in the... So for the offering itself, for the korban ha'omer, they use actually what's called geres, which is, remember, it's barley flour. It's the equivalent grade to solus of wheat flour. Solus is the highest grade of wheat flour. Geres is the corresponding highest grade of barley flour. But that doesn't matter. The point is... No. We're talking about any of the chameshes aminim. Keep in mind the issue of chodosh applies, even though the Torah tells us, even though the korban ha'omer can be brought only from barley, but the din of chodosh applies to all the five grains. So among them is wheat, and from wheat you make kemach. Now, yeah, you can make solus as well, but that's neither here nor there. The point is they were selling kemach. The point is they were selling kemach, which is the lower quality stuff. That's what we think of as flour. No, they're hand picking ears of grain, so that's a shinui. Then when they come, so they do. It could be barley, it could be wheat, it could be any of the chameshes aminim. Yes, but here we're talking about what people are picking in order to sell in the marketplaces. We're not talking about for the carbon. Okay, maybe there's a little bit of confusion over here. Yeah, let's clarify. On the night before the 16th of Nisan, they would go and they would harvest barley for the korban ha'omer. That they harvest in the normal way with sickles, and you have Mishnayos and Menachos describe the whole. They made a whole pageant out of it. They had three people and magels there, kupazu, and they had a whole bunch of people gathering. That you're allowed to harvest in the normal way. That you're doing for the mitzvah of the ha'omer. What we're talking about is, there would be other people who, before the omer was brought, would be going to their fields and were saying, picking. Now, they're not allowed to harvest the grain at that point before the korban omer, but they are allowed to pick ears of grain by hand. Then what they would do is they would be processing it to make flour and dried and to make flour and dried grain and whatever. Reb Meir is saying they shouldn't be doing that before the korban ha'omer is brought, apparently because they might come to eat from it. Reb Yehuda is not concerned about that, it seems, because Reb Yehuda says it was birsan chachamim. So now we're saying that. So now, so far. What we're saying between Rava or Rabba and Abaya is that since he has to pick it, he can't harvest it in the normal way. And let's assume also that when it comes to the grinding and the sifting of it, all of those have to be done with a shinui. That'll be enough to remind him not to eat from it. That is why Rabbi Yehuda, in that case, is not concerned that he might come to eat from it while he's working with it. So we're not talking about the korban ha'omer, we're talking about other grain that's not. Yeah. Okay. The question then is, so they're allowed to pick it with their hands, and Rabba is assuming that they're allowed to be grinding using a hand mill and sifting upside down. Yeah. The problem then is Ela Hodetnan. What about this? We learn in another Mishnah in that perek in Menachos. Koitzrin Beis HaShochin. Now, like this, you have one of the rules as far as Menachos is that, and in general as far as Korbanos, is you're only supposed to bring from the best. Now, when it comes to grain, the best grain is not grown in the valleys. The best grain is grown on hillsides. Therefore, when it comes to using grain, whether it's wheat for korbanos year-round or whether it's barley for the korban ha'omer, it's supposed to be lachatchila. It should come from places. It shouldn't come from valleys. So it should come from fields that are naturally irrigated by rainwater, not ones where you have to irrigate them artificially. So therefore, grain from those places is not able to be brought for the Korban HaOmer. Actually, to be exact, Tosfos says, b'diyeved it would be, but l'chila you can't, so therefore it's considered to be a place from which you can't bring the Omer. And therefore the Mishnah says, kotsun beis ha-sholchim, you're allowed to harvest grain from irrigated fields, v'shaba mokim, or from fields that are in the valleys. Those you're allowed to harvest normally with a sickle. Avaloy gojin, but you're not allowed to make a stack of the grain before the Omer is brought. So the Ksira you're allowed to do, we're going to see soon in the Gemara why, but actually Rashi points out, based on the Gemara over there, it's actually based on a Pasuk. There are Psukim over there that imply that you are allowed to do certain harvesting before the Omer. On the other hand, we're saying the Omer is supposed to be the first harvest. So the answer is, it depends whether we're talking about grain that's suitable, that grows in a place that makes it suitable for the Omer versus not. So if it grows in a beis hashochen or in a valley, where therefore you anyway can't bring grade of that grain, flour of that grade for the korban omer, or for any other korban, then you're allowed to harvest it before the omer. But aval ein gudshin, but you're not allowed to make a stack of it, because the Gemara is going to say soon that when it comes to the harvesting, if you don't harvest it as soon as it's ready, it's going to get ruined. As opposed to the stacking, you can always wait till after the Omer. There's no harm done if you leave it unstacked for a couple days. Harvesting means with an actual sickle, yeah. If you leave it growing longer than necessary, eventually it's going to get ruined, yeah. But yeah. Now, in the Gemara there, we explain that Mishnah goes like Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to learn later on in Ar Masechta, we're going to learn about the people of Yericho who did certain things that the Chachamim approved. They did certain things that the Chachamim protested about and said that they're wrong, and certain other things which, even though the Chachamim weren't happy with, they didn't protest. One of the things it says they did is that they would harvest their fields before the Omer. They would harvest and stack their grain before the Omer, and the Gemara explains over there that. We're going to learn it in the fourth parak of Ar Masechta. So the Gemara over there explains that the Mishnah that we're talking about over here, where it says that you're allowed to harvest but not stack, is according to Rabbi Yehuda. He's the one who talks about the detail of whether the Chachamim are protesting or not, what the Chachamim would approve of and what they don't. Anyway, the point is, my ikalamemar, so then what are you going to say? If you're saying the whole reason why Rabbi Yehuda is allowing it is because you're harvesting in a not usual way, but the fact is, okay, so that takes care of the problem of harvesting before the Omer, but you still have the problem, according to Rabbi Yehuda, of the gzera d'rabbanon, that you might come to eat from it. That applies equally well to grain that grows in a valley or an irrigated field or whatever. Those are also as chadash until the Omer is brought. So therefore, what are you going to say now? You're harvesting, you have a field in a valley, you're harvesting in the normal way using a sickle. Why isn't Rabbi Yehuda concerned that you might come to eat from it while you're harvesting it or while you're processing it later on? So obviously it can't be that can't be the distinction. Ela Amar Abaya. So rather, Abaya says the distinction is chodosh bodol minei, chometz le bodol minei. The difference is, Abaya says, chodosh, the person is more naturally going to keep away from it. Because after all, they haven't been used to eating this year's crop yet. They've known up until now that this year's crop is off limits until the Omer is brought. So they haven't gotten in the habit of eating it, so therefore they're more likely to stay away from it. Earlier in the season, in other words, long before the Omer is brought, they're doing whatever with the grain. At any time when they're in the fields, they could pick a couple of ears of grain and eat them, but they don't because they remember the issue of Chodosh. So now we're not concerned about it. Also, says Rabbi Yehuda, as opposed to Chometz, you eat the whole year round. Well, but if it's Chodosh, then no, you can't. Right, so it's true. With truma and maisa, you're allowed to eat achilas tzarai before it's been processed, before it's really a pnei abayis or whatever, but chodosh isn't like that, yeah. Okay, so then the question is, Omar Rava, did Rabbi Yehuda kasha, did Rabbanon like kasha? Okay, all this time you're dealing though with the contradiction in what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, that here in our Mishnah he seems to be concerned about you eating chametz, and in the Mishnah in Menachos he's not. He's not concerned about you eating Chodosh. You also have to deal with the contradiction within the opinion of the Chachamim. The Chachamim of our Mishnah, Sam Mishnah of Meir, And anyway, when we have the Chachamim arguing over here in the Mishnah, it means all the other Bapashtus, it means all the other Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda's times, including Rabbi Meir. The Mishnah in Menachos, we have Rabbi Meir saying that it was Shaloi Bertzon Chachamim. So how do you explain that? Why there is Rabbi Meir concerned that you may eat from the Chodosh while you're working with it, and over here he's not concerned that you may eat from the Chametz while you're searching for it and finding it? So the Pnei Yeshua asks, why is Rava asking only on Abaya? Wouldn't the same question be on Rava's own answer? In fact, the question might be even more, because with Chodosh, we're saying you have to make a Shinui. And even then, you can only harvest it by hand. And even then, Rav Meir is not allowing them to be doing it, to be processing it and selling it. So he says, actually, that's another reason why to say that before it was Rava. And in fact, then Rava's question is not just on Abaya, it's on Rava as well. Both Rava and Abaya, why are you explaining only Rav Yehuda's, only the Stira in Rav Yehuda, and not the Stira in the Chachamim? On the other hand, Tzlach says not necessarily. If we just had before Abaya's answer, we would say the logic is Chometz is. We would say the logic is that given that Chometz is an Isur Kores and then Chodesh is only an Isur Lav, then fine. People are you're more concerned that they might eat Chometz than you are that they might eat Chodesh. Or the other way around, you could say that maybe since Chodesh is only an Isur Lav, people are likely to be more careless. That's what it is. That since Chodesh is only an Isur Lav, people are likely to be more careless with it, or likely to be less careful with it. But now that you're telling me, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that just the opposite. People are going to be more careful with Chodesh than with Chametz, because Chodesh they haven't eaten all year round, and Chametz they are. Then what's the Lord? Are the Chachamim that, why all of a sudden are we assuming that the Chachamim are the polar opposite of Rabbi Yehuda? Why would we assume Rabbi Meir is the polar opposite of Rabbi Yehuda and saying that, no, Chametz people are that Chametz people are going to be careful about, and they're not going to eat, and we don't have to worry about them eating it during the Bedikah, and Chodosh we are, which would be 180 degrees away from Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore, so the Tzlach says the question could be only on Abaya's answer, not necessarily on the previous answer, whether it's from Rava or Rabba. Anyway, so the answer is, Rabbi Yehuda loy kasha. There's actually no contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda. Kiddush haninon, fine, like we answered, because we're saying ultimately that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Chodosh you're going to stay away from because you haven't been used to eating it up until this point. Chometz not. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want you to be doing Bedikas Chometz after the Zman in our Mishnah, but he doesn't care about you working with Chodosh before the Omer in that Mishnah. Did Rabbanan, Nami Lekasha, and as far as the two opinions of the Chachamim of Rabbi Meir, here and there, respectively, also there's no Kasha, because why is Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah not concerned that if you search for Chametz later in the day or later on during Pesach, you might come to eat from it? The whole point is you're looking for the Chametz in order to burn it. Are you going to eat from it at the same time? That itself is the hecker that you're searching for it in order to destroy it. That itself will be the hecker not to eat from it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda doesn't take that into consideration. Rav Ashi Yoma continues the Gemara. Rav Ashi gives another answer. So far we had Rava or Rabba's answer that you do in the case of Chodosh, you do with a Shinui. However, Abaya slugged that up because what do you do about fields that are in a valley where we don't find that you have to make a Shinui with the harvest? So Abaya had said the point is people are careful. People are more careful about Chodosh than about Chametz because Chodosh, they haven't been in the habit of eating from it all season, and Chametz they have. Rav Ashi is going to give a different answer. There's no contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi Yehuda, because kemach v'kolitnan. Because after all, what did we mention in the Mishnah in Menachos that they were selling right after the Omer was brought? They had kemach, flour, v'koli, and toasted grain. And those are things that you don't eat on their own. The flour itself you don't eat by itself. You make it into bread. The toasted grain also, usually what you do is Rashi says after it's been dried in the oven, it's not roy lechel. Actually, the Tosfos Rid asks on that. We find throughout Shas that they do eat kloyas. They used to eat them as a snack. So he says that maybe the girsa over here shouldn't be kemach v'koli, flour and toasted grain, but rather kemach koli, flour from toasted grain. So you could mix it. Once the grain is toasted, it becomes sweet, and then you make a flour from it, and it has a sweet taste. Fine, you can make You can make bread or cake or whatever out of it. You could put it, you could put it in certain kinds of drinks that it mentions in brachos and in other places, shisa and such like, but you're not going to eat it by itself. So therefore, Ravashi is saying, so Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned that you're going to eat from it while you have it available for sale, because it's not really edible. However, the Gemara says, Hodir of Ashi Bedusahi. However, this that of Ashi is saying is Bedusa, which literally means a fiction. So either that means, so one possibility is that one possibility, the Mefoshim say, you have this expression, Bedusa or Berusa, in a number of places in Chas. One possibility is that it can mean that Rav Ashi didn't actually say this. He, one of his Talmidim, incorrectly attributed it to him. There's a few places in Chaslo where you have an expression like that, Bedusa. Some places the expression is Barusa, which means like something outside. It belongs outside the Bais Medrash. It doesn't belong in the Bais Medrash. Anyway, the point is, let's explain why what Rav Ashi is saying is Bedusa, and then let's talk a little bit about this expression, why we call it something that an Amora says, Bedusa, a fiction. So, anyway, the point is, the Gemara says, but first, Hotenach mikoli ve'elach. Okay, that explains. Once it's made into koli, sure, you can't eat it anymore. Mi'ikra ad koli ma'ik lememer. Nu, what is Rav Ashi going to answer what Rabbi Yehuda would say about the stages up until that point? So you're going to answer like we did earlier on the Amud, that since you have to pick it by hand, then that's going to be a shinui, and you're going to remember. We're back to the question about that you're allowed to harvest fields that are irrigated and fields that are in the valleys normally, because again, you can't bring karbonas from them. And we say that Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda. Then how would Rav Ashi explain that? So we have to say that what Rav Ashi is saying is Bedusa. Now, how do we use such an expression on something that an Amora says? So there's a vote from a Moshe Tzvi of Savran, one of the early Chassidish Rebbes. He was a Talmud of Rav Levi Yitzchak Peditchever. Anyway, he writes, in general, you find this expression, Bedusa, in most places in Shas. It's actually in connection with something that Rav Ashi said. One or two places, you find it in connection with other Amoraim of that generation. So he says, the vote is, that was the end of the time when they're transmitting Torah Shebaal Peh. From then on, after that, after the Chassimus HaGemara, then the transmission of Torah Shebaal Peh is over, and then from then on, what we know of Torah Shebaal Peh is what's written down in the Mishnah and the Gemara and Braises and Midrashim and so forth. So usually usually he's teaching something which is, it goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. So there's no arguing with that. I mean, there can be arguing with the applicability of it and with the details of it and whatever, but the din itself is a din. We can't call it Bedusa. But when you have something that the Amora himself said from his own Svara, and in a later generation, they're not great in the later generations after the Chassimus HaGemara, they're not great enough to have their Svaras of their own and be part of Torah Shebaal Peh. Even in Rav Ashi's times, that stage was already beginning. So sometimes when he says something of his own Svara, we end up saying it doesn't really work out. It's Bedusa. Had he said it. This is Rav Moshe Tzvi of Savran, his name is. The Amora is what Rav Ashi was saying over here. Rav Ashi was saying, yes. With that, the Gemara is saying, B'pashtos the Rabbon and Savaroi. The Bapashas of the next generation after him, yeah. With that said, though, on the other hand, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, no. But Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, says something that's almost the other way around. He says that, no, it's all part of Chochmah, Sirat Tzon, and Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's still part of Torah. On the other hand, but the Eibishter himself decided, when he gave this part of Torah, that this particular part is Bedusa, that's something that's not meant to be understood with our Seichel. Therefore, we can't accept the Ba'alacha, but it's still part of Torah, which is almost the opposite of what Rav Moshe Tzvi is saying. Okay. Anyway. So the bottom line is, we can't accept Rav Ashi's answer. We stick with Abaya's answer. That Chodosh people are more likely to stay away from, and Chometz they're not, because Chodosh they've been used to, they can't eat the crop yet, and Chometz meanwhile you have the whole year round to eat.
What's the exact meaning of Bedusa?
The exact meaning of Bedusa is a fiction, like Boda. The word Bedusa means like a fiction, like something that somebody made up. So one thing is, you know, how do we say something like that on Rav Ashi? It's not, one explanation is, it's not necessarily that Rav Ashi himself said it. he may have said something which is Talmidim incorrectly inferred from it this idea, but it's not really valid. In some other places in the Gemara, instead of the word bedusa, instead it uses the word barusa, which means the outside, which is in those places, Mefoshim explained, it's like a respectful way of saying this doesn't belong in the Mismedrash. Take it outside. That's also possible that instead of Bedusa regularly, it should say Bedusa. So it could be. Okay. No, different word. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Onward. So the Gemara asks, V'chol hecha delay bodo minei mi gozer Rabbi Yehuda? So are you telling me that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that any time you have something where you don't naturally stay away from it, then Rabbi Yehuda is going to be gozer, as was saying by chametz, that because people regularly eat chametz throughout the year, therefore he's concerned that you might eat from it while you're being bodo chametz? We learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, Lo yikav adam shveferes shel beitza. A person is not allowed to make a hole in an eggshell, or the Maharil says another possibility, shveferes shel beitza, which means a reed like a bamboo that grows in the swamps. Whatever, you make a hole, you use it as a reservoir, you make a hole in it, v'malena shemen, you fill it up with oil, v'itnena b'tzad haner, and put it next to a lamp, or actually not really b'tzad, in the Mishnah in Shabbos, actually al-pi haner, you suspend it over the lamp, b'shvil sh'tehem v'natefes, in order that it'll drip down into the lamp and it'll supply it with more oil. So you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to set such a thing up before Shabbos, va'afili hi shocheres, even if instead of an eggshell or a piece of bamboo, instead if you use an earthenware container. The point is, the Chachamim are concerned, the Tanakhama is concerned, that you might then use some of the oil on Shabbos. And if you take out some of the oil from that reservoir, then you're going to be over on the issue of Mechabe. There's actually a bit of discussion among Rishonim. What exactly are you over on? Because on the face of it, okay, you're taking away oil from the lamp. Isn't it grumma? It's more like an indirect thing because the oil is not actually in the lamp right now. So there's a few possibilities. Tosfos in Shabbos discusses that maybe as you're taking the oil, you're causing the flame itself to dim a little bit. So therefore, at that moment, you're over on Mechabe. It drips every couple of seconds, but whatever, as you're taking some of that oil, you're causing the flame, you have it, it's set up in such a way that it's close enough to the flame, to learn Tosfos, that maybe therefore you're dimming the flame a little bit at that time. The Rosh gives another thing, he says that grumma would only be if it's something completely indirect, here the reservoir is directly feeding the flame, so it can't be considered grumma. The Rambam says it's because of muksa, whatever it is, the Chachamim don't allow it, even if the reservoir is made out of earthenware, which means, therefore, the oil will not be as clean. You won't necessarily use it for food. Even so, the Chachamim still make the Gzeira. But Rabbi Yehuda matter. Rabbi Yehuda says it's allowed. Now, oil you use all the time. Now, when it comes to the Chachamim, there's no problem, because we're saying usually the Chachamim might be concerned as well, but by Chametz they're not, because you're in the process of finding it in order to burn it. So we understand why the Chachamim don't want to allow it over there. But why is Rabbi Yehuda allowing it, if we just established that according to Rabbi Yehuda, anything that loy bodol minei, anything that you don't stay away from, you might end up eating? So why isn't he concerned that you might take some of this oil and you're going to be chayev? The answer is Hasam Mishum Chumr the Shabbos Mivdal B'dili. The answer is Rabbi Yehuda would say that Shabbos is an Isser Kodesh, an Isser Skila. Therefore, you're going to be more careful with it, and you're not going to come to take oil from this reservoir. He says, okay. However, v'Rami the Shabbos ad Shabbos. In that case, then we can find a stira regarding the dinim of Shabbos itself. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. If you have the rope attached to a bucket broke on Shabbos and you need to draw water, you're not allowed to tie the rope again with a knot, because that's one of the obvious malachas. You can only make a bow tie. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Korach Olav Punda Sakia. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't make a bow tie. You can wind around it a punda, which Rashi says is a hollow belt, or a psakia, which is a garter that you put on your in those days when they didn't have elastic on their socks. They wore garters around the tops of their socks to keep them from falling off. So you wind that around the broken ends of the rope. You wind it around tightly. You don't tie it. Ovovad shaloy yan venu. But you can't make a bow tie. Actually, Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns that if you're using a punda or a psakia, then you are actually allowed to make a knot, because it won't be a kesher shokayama. You're not going to leave your punda or psakia there for any length of time. You're going to tie it, draw the water, and then untie it. When he says of avad shelo ya'amdenu, he means the rope. If you wanted to retie the rope together, and the Tanakama is saying that you can retie the two ends together in a bow, Rabbi Yehuda is not allowing it. So kasha did Rabbi Yehuda, did Rabbi Yehuda, kasha did Rabbanon, did Rabbanon. So now we have a contradiction where Rabbi Yehuda is not allowing you to make a bow tie, presumably because you might come to make a knot, even though it's an Isser Shabbos, and Isser Shabbos, we're saying, is something that people are careful about. Meanwhile, the Chachamim, by the oil on Machmir, and here they're Makel. The answer is, did Rabbanon like Kasha? Did Chachamim, there's no Kasha, in their opinion, because they would say, Shemen b'Shemen Michlaf, it's easy to confuse one oil with other oil. So you have the oils in the reservoir over here. You don't think of that this is being used to feed the lamp, and therefore this is off limits, whereas this other oil is mutter, and I'm allowed to take it, so you're likely to confuse one for the other. You're not going to confuse a bow tie with a knot. You're not going to say, if I'm allowed to do a bow tie, then I'm allowed to do a regular knot as well. They're very different. And did Rabbi Yehuda like Kasha? Within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, there's no Kasha, because time did Rabbi Yehuda love Mishum to Gozer Aniva Otukshira. It's not because Rabbi Yehuda says, don't make a bow tie because you might come to make a knot. Yeah, we're saying that when it comes to, that's the thing, right? Exactly. Ela Mishum to Kasavra Aniva Gufakshira. He holds that a bow tie is considered a knot la halacha. So therefore, it's not a matter of a Gzeira that you might come. That itself is something that's also on Shabbos. Now, with that said, the Gemara asks, "Chevel demai." Now, what kind of rope are we? I skipped the line. The Rami did Rabbanon adid Rabbanon. However, though, we still have a stira within the opinions of the Chachamim, the Tanan, because we learn in a Mishnah in that same connection. You're allowed to tie the bucket in order to draw water using a psakia, but not with a rope. Rabbi Yehuda Matir. Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to use a rope. A psakia, we just said, is a garter, that a band that you put around your leg is called a psakia. There's a word in English, fascia or fascia or whatever, which means like a band or a ribbon or something. It's actually the same word. They both come from Latin. Yeah. So the Mishnah says over there, you're allowed to tie the bucket with a psakia, with a garter, avaloi bechevel, but not with a rope. Rabbi Yehuda Matir. Rabbi Yehuda is allowing you to use a rope. Now, why can't you use a rope? Because you might. I don't know. Yeah, they did. But even if not, then yeah. No, whatever. Okay. Anyway. So the Tanakama is saying you can't use a rope because you might end up leaving it there, and then you made a knot. You made a permanent knot on Shabbos. But Rabbi Yehuda Matir, Rabbi Yehuda is allowing it. Now we ask in the Gemara over there, Chevel Demai, what kind of rope are we talking about? Ilema Chevel D'Alma, are you talking about a plain old rope? What do you mean, Rabbi Yehuda Matir? Why is Rabbi Yehuda allowing you to tie it in place? Kesher Shokayamo, it's going to be a permanent knot. Devade also Levatuli, you're for sure going to be Mavatul over there. And then you've done a Malacha. Ela Pshita de Gaudi. Obviously, we're talking about a weaver's rope that a weaver uses at some point during the course of his malacha. He needs a rope. So it's not a normal rope. It's not something that you're going to leave. It's not something that you can use on an ongoing basis for drawing water, maybe because it's not strong enough or whatever. Or because the weaver is going to need it after Shabbos. The Gozer Rabbanon Chevel de Gaudi Otto Chevel de Alma. And yet we see the Chachamim are making a Gzera because you might confuse that with a regular rope. So what are you telling me that the Chachamim are, fine with making a bow tie because it's different than a regular knot? A Chevel de Gaudi is different than a regular rope, and yet we see they are Gzera. The answer is Ein, yeah. Chevel b'chevel mechlaf. After all, you could confuse one rope with another. I never b'chshir alay mechlafa, but a bow tie and a regular knot are so different that you're not going to confuse them. So now at this point, we understand everything that we have between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim were saying, any time that you might confuse things, then we're going to make a Gzeira. That applies whether Shabbos or other Isurim. They don't care about the fact that Shabbos is more of an Isur Chamor. So therefore, when it comes to Chodosh, we're going to say you can't be working with Chodosh before the Omer because you might come to eat from it. Because after all, some grain you're allowed to eat at that point, some you're not. You may confuse it. The same thing with the oil in the reservoir. The same thing with the rope. Chametz, they're not gonna have a problem with it. Chametz, they're not gonna have a problem because after all, you're in the process of finding it in order to burn it. And bow ties, they don't have a problem because a bow tie is much different than a knot. Rabbi Yehuda, meanwhile, his perspective is, his perspective is a bow tie is a knot, but his perspective is anything that people are going to stay away, anything that people are not going to naturally stay away from, we have to be goyzer. Therefore, chometz, you eat year-round, therefore he's goyzer there. Chodosh, on the other hand, you stay away for. Shabbos, all of these things, you stay away from them because of the issue of Shabbos. The only exception is the bow tie, and that's because the bow tie itself is also. Okay. Now the question is, v'chol hecha de bodo minele gozer of Yehuda. So now, on the other hand, you're telling me that whenever a person does stay away from it, then Rabbi Yehuda is not gozer. This is the inverse of the question we asked before. Before we were trying to show places where you don't stay away from it, like with the oil, and yet Rabbi Yehuda is not gozer. Now we have the other way around. Things where people do stay away from it, they avoid doing it, and Rabbi Yehuda is still gozer. So why is he not doing that by Chodosh? V'hotanya, actually V'hotanan, because the Mishnah in Bechoros, Bechorosh Ochzedam, a bechor that was seized by blood, which means it has high blood pressure, for example, and therefore you have to let blood for it immediately, or it could die from it. Afilahu mess, and the din is even if the animal is going to die. And remember, if a bechor dies, we're talking about the bechor is already in the possession of the kohen. He's just waiting for it to develop a mum, but only then can he shecht it and eat it. The problem is, we're choshed koinim to make a mum in a bechor because they want to get it over and done with so they can shecht it and eat it. But also, bechlal, there's an isser daraisa to make a mum in kodshim. So and the problem is, when you're making a puncture for bloodletting, you might do it in a way that makes a mum. Therefore, afilu mes en mekizin leidam divi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda then says that even if the animal is going to die if you don't let blood, you're not allowed to do it, says Rabbi Yehuda, because you might do it in a place where it makes a mum. You might do it in a... Okay. So Rabbi Yehuda says that you can't let blood even in that case because we make... Now, kodshim, people stay away from. Kodshim, people are not going to be careless with. And still, Rabbi Yehuda says that we make a gzeira because you might do it in a place where it's going to make a mum. But chum amim yakiz, the chum say you could let blood over vajla yato by mum as long as you do it in a place where it doesn't make a mum. Now, I forgot to mention before, well, I mentioned it briefly, that Rameyer is allowing things. Rameyer is allowing things where there's going to be hefsid. So, for example, in the case of Chodosh, even though Rameyer doesn't want you stacking the grain or grinding it or sifting it or whatever before the Omer is brought, but allow you to harvest it if it's in a Beis HaShochen or whatever because otherwise there's a hefsid. It's going to get ruined altogether. The same thing over here. Rameyer is going to allow because the animal is going to die if you don't let blood. Therefore, he's going to allow it. On the Sabbath Alachim also, but fine, yeah. So we see, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda is making a gzera, even by Kodshim, which people are more careful with. You have, by the way, the Mishnah mentions there a third opinion, that Rabbi Shimon says you would actually be allowed to let blood for it anywhere, whether it's a place that makes a mum or not, because he says, in effect, the animal already, so to speak, has, because he says that you're doing it for the sake of refuah. So therefore, it's not a problem if it ends up making a mum. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yehuda is the most machmir. He says you can't do it at all. So why? If it's something that people stay away from, and yet he's gozer. The answer is, The difference is because there, when a person is in a panic about his mammon, this koyin is in a panic. If I don't do something right away, this bechor is going to die, and then I'm going to be left with something with an animal that I can't do anything with. You can't even, by the way, if a bechor dies, you can't even feed it to animals or anything because it was kodshim. You have to bury it. So he doesn't want to have to do that. So I'm Rinnan, so we say Isharis Leib Mokam Shein Oisin by Mum. So if you allow him to make to do the bloodletting in a place where it's not going to make a Mum, Osilam Evid Mokam Shein by Mum, he might end up doing it in a place where it is going to make a Mum. For example, the lip or other places, the ear or whatever other places that'll make it a Mum. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want to allow it altogether. So this is a new factor that we didn't consider before, where you're Bohol. Vir Rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon answer to that? They say just the opposite. The Kolshikin, the Eloi Shardis like Klal, if you don't allow him to do anything at all, Osila Medba, then he's going to do it in the wrong place. At least allow him to do it in a place where it's not going to make a Mum, and then that way they'll take away some of his panic, and he'll do it the right way. Okay. So now the question is, now that we brought in this factor that Rabbi Yehuda is concerned where a person is bohol amamoina, that he might do the wrong thing, and therefore he makes a gzera, umi aminan la Rabbi Yehuda adam bohol amamoina, do we really say that according to Rabbi Yehuda? Vatnan, we learn in a Mishnah, in Beitza, Rabbi Yehuda Omer en Makadrin, or Makardin, really it's supposed to be, with the Reish before the Dalet, Abahema B'Yomtiv, you're not allowed to Makarid an animal on Yomtiv. We're going to explain in a second that Kirud and Kirtsuf are two ways of combing the animal with a comb. So Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to do Kirud on Yomtiv, because that causes a wound on the animal, and that would be a Malacha. Aval Makautzefin, but you're allowed to do Makautzefin, which is with a different kind of comb, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second. V'chamim in Makadrin, Afin Makautzefin. The Chum say you can't do either one, because again, Adam Bohol Amamona, if you allowed one, you might allow the other. And we learn in a Braisa, Ezo Kidur, the Ezo Kirud, the Ezo Kirtsuf. What's the difference between them? Why is Rabbi Yehuda allowing one and not the other? Kidur is Ktanim. Kidur is you use a comb with small teeth, the Oisin Chabura, and as you're scraping the animal with it, as you're taking this comb and combing and scraping off the mud and whatever from the animal, it's very likely to make a wound, to scrape the animal's skin, and therefore you're doing a malacha. Now, certain malachas you're allowed on Yom Tov, but this isn't malachas eichel nefesh, and there's no mitoichiu either, so therefore you're not allowed to, as opposed to kirtsuf gdolim vein oisin chabura. Kirtsuf involves using a comb with larger teeth. Those ones, they're not as sharp, so therefore they're less likely to make a chabura. So the point is, Rabbi Yehuda is not saying, so now the Chachamim are saying that if you do one, you might come to do the other one, and therefore it's also. Rabbi Yehuda, meanwhile, is allowing the one with the large teeth and not the small one. Now why? Adam Bohol Amamoyne. The answer is, the difference is, Hossam, over there, in the case of the Bechur, De'ish Shavik Le'mayis, if you don't do something for the Bechur, if you don't let blood for it, Mayis, then the animal is going to die, I'm in an Adam Bohol Amamoyne. Then we're saying a person is in a panic, and he might do the wrong thing, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda is going to make a Gzera. Hacha, but over here, you're talking about just combing off the mud, and dirt and bugs and whatever off the animal. So e shovikla, if you leave it and you don't curry down the animal like that, tsira ba'alma, who it's only the animal's going to have, or it's only going to be a little uncomfortable. Lo yamrin, adam bohol amamoyne, the Rabbi Yehuda is not going to say adam bohol. So we go back to the usual thing that if it's something that a person is going to be careful about, which Yom Tov, after all, is an Issur Lav, so he's going to be more careful about it. So therefore, we're not gozer one, that if he does one, he might be allowed the other. Therefore, we allow him the kirtsuf, which is with a comb with using larger teeth. But blood not, because again, blood, the animal might die without it, and he might be in such a panic that he's going to do it in the wrong place, that he's going to do it in a place that makes the animal a mum. Yeah, that's according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Hanan over here gives a different explanation of kirud and kirtsuf. We're talking about, in both cases, we're dealing with, there are bugs that are attached to the animal's skin, like ticks or other such things, but you have large, the gdolim versus ketanim are, you have large ones where you can remove them without injuring the animal, and then you have smaller ones, which are more like ticks or whatever, which are more tightly attached, and as you pull them off the animal's skin, you're going to rip off a little skin and make it bleed a little bit. Same idea, in other words, the point is, so one is making a chabura, one is not. Rabbi Yehuda is not gozer that if you do one, you might come to do the other. The chachamim are concerned about that. Okay. The last thing is then, Rabbi Yehuda, Maishno Gabi Chometz, the Gozer, or Maishno Gabi Kirtzuf, the Gozer. No, then why is it by Chometz he's concerned he might eat it, and by Kirtzuf he's not concerned that you might use, that you might do Kidur instead, which is with smaller teeth or smaller bugs or whatever, and you might come to make a Chabura. The answer is lechem belechem mechlef. He would say that bread you might confuse with bread. If you're allowed to eat bread, you're allowed to eat bread during the rest of the year. Therefore, you may come to eat it on Pesach. Kidur, but kirtzuf, like mechlef. But on the other hand, kidur and kirtzuf use two different kinds of combs, or they involve two different kinds of bugs, and therefore you're less likely to confuse them. Whereas the Chacham say you still might confuse them. Right, because again, they're Odom Bohol Amamone. So now the bottom line is, we say that Rabbi Yehuda would say, where a person is boidol from it, where a person stays away from it, for example, Chodesh, where he's been in the habit of staying away from it, then he's allowed to. Also, where he stays away from it because of the chumrah of it, for example, with Shabbos, with the oil over there. On the other hand, where Bohol Amamone, where the animal is going to die, for example, then not where the animal is just going to be uncomfortable. Well, ultimately with bread you might confuse it, but not Rabbi Yehuda is saying that kirud and kirtzuf are different enough that you're not going to confuse them. Okay. Mishnah says, Rabbi Meir omer ochen kol chomesh v'sof from the tchilas sheish. Rabbi Meir says you're allowed to eat chometz. Now we learned before that d'oraisa you're not allowed to eat chometz from the end of the sixth hour of Erev Pesach, from chatzos of Erev Pesach. However, we're going to see that the Chachamim put in a safety margin because you might have that you don't know on a cloudy day, for example, what time it is. That a mayor says, Oichlin kol chomesh, you're allowed to eat chometz the entire fifth hour of the day, and then you burn the chometz at the beginning of the sixth hour. So the point is, Rabbi Meir is saying, the seventh hour, it's already going to be also d'oraisa. You might confuse the sixth with the seventh hour. Therefore, we don't want you to be eating chametz or having enough from it during that time. You should be burning it. The fifth hour, the mayor says, is far enough away from the seventh that you're not going to confuse them, and therefore it should be fine. To put it in modern terms, chatzos erev Pesach nowadays, when we have daylight savings, is usually around 1 o'clock. We're talking Shois Zmanias here, according to most Rishonim and Achronim. We're talking Shois Zmanias over here, where you divide the day into 12 hours. The Machlokas, whether you divide from Netz until Tzeis HaKachavim, which is the Alter Rebbe and the Vilna Gaon hold that way, or whether you go from Alois HaShachar until Tzeis, which is how the Magen Avraham holds. That's why you have in the calendars. You have, for example, Seif Zman Krishma and Seif Zman Tefillah, whatever, you have two different times. Anyway, Chatzos these days is around 1. A Shah's Zmanis around Pesach time is around 60 minutes, give or take. So the end of the fifth hour would be, at the end of the fifth hour is an hour before Chatzos, so around 12. So the mayor is saying that during the fifth hour, from 11 to 12, you're still allowed to eat chametz. A little after 12, you should be burning it, and that way you're done with it by the time it comes 1 o'clock, by the time it comes Chatzos. But you don't need more of a safety margin than that. He says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no, Oichlin kol arba, you're allowed to eat during the entire fourth hour of the day, so let's say until 11 o'clock. The Tolin kol chomesh, during the entire fifth hour, it's suspended. You can't eat it, but you don't have to burn it yet either. At that point, as we're going to learn in the next parak, you're allowed to still feed it to animals, you're allowed to sell it to a goy, etc. So that would be during the fifth hour, from 11 to 12, the servant mitzvah shesh, and then a little after 12, you start burning it. What we do nowadays, actually, is we burn it a little bit earlier. We burn it before the end of the fifth hour, and the reason for that is because we want to be able to do bittul afterwards. We want to be able to say kol hamira afterwards. We learned before that once the beginning of the sixth hour comes, midirabbanon, it's off limits, then you can't be mevatel it anymore. So in order to be mevatel after the burning, like we want to, then we finish the burning before the end of the fifth hour. So in our example over here, a little before 12 o'clock, let's say. Usually Seif Zman Bi'ur Chametz comes out like 11:40 or 11:45 or so. Yeah. Okay. So Rabbi Yehuda in short is saying, when it comes to eating, we have to have a margin of 2 hours safety. When it comes to having enough, fine, then 1 hour is enough. The Oid Amr of Yehuda, also of Yehuda says, I'll give you an example of where we see that there's a difference between the time when you can eat and the time when you can't eat, but you don't have to burn yet. In the times of the Bismik, the Shtei Chalos Chol Toida Psulos, 2 Pasul Chalos from a Korban Toida. Now, a Korban Toida is brought with 30 Chalos of Matzah and 10 of Chametz. So they would take two of the chametz ones, which were posel, and we'll learn in the Gemara eventually what made them posel, and they would put them al munochas al gav ha'itztava. They would place them on Erev Pesach on top of the itztava. The itztava they had rows of benches surrounding the harabai, on the edge, around the edges of the harabai, on the inside, inside the walls of the harabai, going all around. Those benches, they had pillars in front of those benches, and the pillars supported a roof. So you had, the idea was that this way, it's an English sort of thing, it's called a colonnade. So they had a colonnade surrounding the harabais on all sides. One idea is this way people could sit there. You're not allowed to sit in the Azara, but you're allowed to sit in the harabais. So they had these benches with a roof over them. So they would put the chalas on top of that roof. So it's high up. The Beis Mikdash was the highest point of the city, or almost the highest point. So this way everybody could see them. As long as both chalas were there, it means it's not the end of the fourth hour yet. Kola Am Oichlin, so everybody would still be eating chametz. Nitlachas, once they took one of them away, Tolin, then they would suspend the chametz, stop eating. Lo Oichlin Lo Sof, and they couldn't eat it anymore, but they didn't have to start burning it yet. Nitlushtei, and once both of them were removed, Hischilu Kola Am Sof, and then everybody would start burning their chametz. So we see, says Rabbi Huda, that they actually did it that way. They actually had that extra safety margin of one extra hour that you can't eat. Which is, of course, how we have nowadays, that's the halacha, which is why we have in the calendar Sof Zman Achilas Chametz, and then about an hour later, Sof Zman Biur Chametz. Ram Gamliel says, it depends. When you said, I agree that there is a point with certain kind of chametz that you can't eat it after 4 hours, but it depends. It's not a matter of, not like Rabbi Meir says there's no shzera at all, not like Rabbi Huda says it applies across the board, but chulin ne'echolin kol arba, chulin you can only eat during the 4 hours until 11 o'clock, or truma kol chomesh, but we give you an extra hour to eat chametz of truma, because after all, as long as you can eat them, you're not allowed to burn, as long as you can eat truma, you're not allowed to burn it. So we shouldn't be goyzer that you can't eat truma during that 1 hour. The servant, it's illustration, then you burn everything, chulin and truma, at the beginning of the sixth hour. So according to Ram Gamliel, you can eat chulin until 11 o'clock, and you can eat truma, chametz of truma, until 12 o'clock. And then you burn it right after that. Okay. Because that's the thing. Truma, we're giving an extra hour, because after all, you have a mitzvah, ushmautim es mishmeres trumoisai. You have to guard truma and not destroy it if you don't have to. So as long as you don't have to, so okay, fine. The Rebbe Gamliel agrees the chamim have to build in a safety margin, because you might mix up 1 hour with another, because it might be cloudy or whatever, as the Gemara is now going to discuss. But we don't want to make, when it comes to chulin, fine, we can say you have to stop 2 hours before there's man dar isa. But when it comes to truma, he wants to say that you should only have to stop 1 hour before. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara is going to now start a discussion based on a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which eventually we're going to relate back to our Mishnah. We'll start the discussion today and continue it tomorrow, Bez Hashem. The Gemara says, Tznan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Echad Oimer B'Shnayim B'Chodesh V'Echad Oimer B'Shloisha. Suppose two Edim come to Beis Din, saying, let's say, that Reuven killed Shimon. One of them says it took place on the second day of the month, and the other one says it was on the third day. That's not necessarily a contradiction. Edus and Kayemis. The Edus is valid. Now, when Beis Din would interrogate the Edim, they would ask them seven basic questions. It's called Hakiris, to establish the time and place of it. And then they would ask them a bunch of other questions that are called Bedikas. Among the seven Hakiris are the day of the week, the day of the month, the year, etc. So let's say the two Edim matched up perfectly on everything. It was on Wednesday. It was in the year. It was a day in Kislev in the year Tufshin Pei Aleph, etc., etc. The only thing is, one of them says it was Wednesday Bez Kislev, and the other one says it was Wednesday Gimel Kislev. So that's not necessarily a contradiction, because Edus and Kayemis, the Edus is valid. It could be one of them knows that the previous month was 30 days, and the other one doesn't. He thinks it was a 29-day month, so therefore they're a day off. Now, Rashi explains, usually Beis Din has the responsibility to try and refute the Edim, however possible, because we want to save the guy's life, the Hitzilu Eda. But in this case, where they got all the other details the same, and this is the only detail on which they're differing, then we have to say that there's no way that we can't say that refutes their Edus. We have to necessarily say that it's because because one knows and one doesn't. Tosfos also adds, actually, that the Gemara elsewhere in Sanhedrin says that most people that most people don't know whether the previous month was 29 or 30 days until the Gemara says until the middle of the month. So therefore, so the fact that you have a rove of people who don't know that is reason enough to say that therefore we can't contradict their edus. On the other hand, echad omer v'shloisha v'echad omer v'hei, but if one of them says it was on Gimel Kislev and the other one says Hey Kislev, edus and b'teila, then their edus is batal, because then there's no way, there's no way that obviously one of them is making a mistake or lying or whatever. Now, the edim themselves are not going to be in trouble because they're not edim zoyimim, but nevertheless, the person himself that they're testifying against, we can't execute him on the basis of such edus. We don't say, by the way, that maybe the previous 2 months were Chadoshim Malayim, and one guy knows of that and the other one doesn't, because by the time the middle of the month comes, everybody knows what the previous month was. On the other hand, so that's as far as days. Now, the Gemara is just bringing that, because the Gemara is bringing the whole Mishnah, but what we're going to focus on is the next case in the Mishnah that talks about a difference as far as hours. Echad Omer B'Shtei Shois V'Echad Omer B'Sholosh Shois. If one of them said it took place in the second hour of the day, and the other one says it took place during the third hour, Eidus and Kayemis, the Eidus is still valid, as we're going to discuss soon why. On the other hand, Echad Omer B'Sholosh V'Echad Omer B'Chamish, but if one says it was during the third hour, and the other one says during the fifth hour, then their Eidus is Batal, because they're too far apart. Divrei Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eidus and Kayemis. Rabbi Yehuda says that the Eidus is still valid, because a person could make a mistake, They could make a mistake to that of 2 hours. That's what we're going to discuss, and that's how we're going to relate it back to our Mishnah. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, Echad Omer B'Chomesh V'Echad Omer B'Sheva. If one says it was during the fifth hour and the other one says during the seventh hour, then Eidus and Taylor, then their Eidus is bottle, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Sheva Chomesh, Chama B'Mizrach, V'Sheva, Chama B'Mayrav, because during the fifth hour, the sun is still on the east side of the sky. On the seventh hour already, it's after Chatzos, the sun is on the west side of the sky. So that's something easy to tell, and there's no way that we can assume that the Eid made a mistake on the hour based on that. If you analyze this machloikus of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, it comes out like this. According to Rav Meir, we don't assume that a person would make a mistake in the time at all. So why does he allow the second and the third hour? We're going to see in a second. L'divir of Yehuda, Adam Toya Chatzi Shah. And according to Rav Yehuda, we can assume a person would make a mistake up to half an hour. Namely, L'divir of Meir, Ein Adam Toya V'Loiklum. Why does Rav Meir allow an Eidus where one of them says the second hour and one of them says the third hour? Because the thing must have happened when the second hour is ending and the third hour is starting. In other words, let's say at exactly 3 o'clock. So one aide is calling it the second hour because it's the very end of the, or let's say 2 o'clock actually, whatever. So one of them is calling it the second hour because it's the very end of the second hour, and the other one is calling it the third hour because it's the very beginning of the third hour. So according to the mayor, that we can accept, but not more than that. V'hodik omer shtayim means v'soiv shtayim. So the one who says that it was the second hour means the end of the second hour. V'hodik omer sholosh b'tchilas sholosh. The one who says three means the beginning of the third hour. But the mayor will not allow any more leeway than that. Now, the Gemara is going to ask later, which we'll learn tomorrow, Best Hashem, what do we mean? We should ask them, do you mean the beginning of the second hour? Do you mean the end of the second hour? Do you mean the beginning of the third? Do you mean the end of the third? How can we just say, because he says second, we're allowed to assume it means the end of the second hour, and because he says third, it means you're allowed to... So we'll get to that. We'll get to that tomorrow, Best Hashem. But according to Abaya, so far we're saying, yeah, according to the mayor, we don't allow any more leeway than that. On the other hand, L'divir, Rav Yehuda, Anam Toya Chatzi Shah, according to Rav Yehuda, we could say a person could make a mistake up to half an hour. Ma'isa Kihava V'Palga D'Arbahava, when we can assume the thing happened, let's say, in the middle of the fourth hour, so let's say 3:30, V'Haidika Amash Sholosh B'Soif Sholosh, so the one who says it was in the third hour means at the end of the third hour, at 3 o'clock, let's say, V'Katoi Palga D'Shaita, so he said a half hour early. He said 3 o'clock when he should have said 3:30. The one who says the fifth hour means the very beginning of the fifth hour, four o'clock. So he's mistaken that he's calling it 4 o'clock when really it was 3:30. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says you can accept such edus. Ikadamri, that's one version of what Abaya said. Another version is Amar Abaya, Kshikim Salaima, Ladivir Rameo Odom Taya Mashu. According to Rameo, we could say a person would make a mistake of a Mashu of a few minutes. Ladivir Rabbi Yehuda Odom Taya Shau Mashu. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, the leeway that we allow is an hour and a little bit. Namely, Ladivir Rameo Odom Taya Mashu, Maisaki Hava Oy Besoif Shtaim Hava Oy Betchilas Shalosh, that it happened either almost at the end of the second hour or almost at the beginning of the third, so 2:59 or 3:01. Because how likely is it? I think Tosfos Arosh says, come on, the first version is saying it would have had to happen exactly at 3:00. How likely is it that it happened exactly at that moment? More likely it was 2:58, 2:59, 3:01, 3:02, whatever. And then it was at the end of the second hour, the beginning of the third. So one of them is making a little bit of a mistake. One of them is saying it was at the end of the second hour because it was correct. It was at 2:59. The other one is watched. It's a few minutes off. So he's saying it was during the fourth hour, but meaning it was 3:01, but really it was actually 2:59. So that's fine. L'divir Rabbi Yehuda Adam Taya Shau Mashu. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a person might make a mistake of up to an hour in a little bit. Namely, Rabbi Yehuda, who's allowing if one aide says the third hour and the other one says the fifth hour, so either it happened at the end of the third hour at 3:59 or at the beginning of the fifth hour, 5:01, one of them is an hour and a little bit off. So one of them says it was during the third hour, it was at 3:59, which is correct. The other one says the fifth hour, meaning 5:01. His watch is wrong. It's really, really the time. Time was 3:59, but his watch, his not watch, they didn't have watches in those days, but whatever. When he looked at the sun, he mistook its position and thought that it was an hour, that it was an hour later when it was 5:01. So those are two versions of how Abaya learns the machlokes. And then we'll talk about tomorrow, Bez Hashem, how Rava disagrees with that and presents a different understanding of the Machlokas. And then once we have that, then we're going to relate it back to our Mishnah and see why Rav Meir needs you to have a leeway of only an hour when it comes to not eating chametz, and Rav Yehuda is requiring 2 hours. Which actually seems to be the opposite, because in the case of the Eidos, Rav Meir is allowing very little mistake, and Rav Yehuda is allowing much more leeway. So we're going to get into all that tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Yeah.